you? Good back there, Sebastian? All right. Hello, everybody. Again, yes, it is a very happy Sabbath. It's nice to see all of you. It's wonderful to be able to meet as a bigger group from time to time. You know, I hope we can figure out ways to do this, you know, every now and then throughout the year. And that we keep in contact with each other, share our prayer requests back and forth, share our praise reports back and forth. But this is just good, I think, for all of us. I want to start out. I already told you where I'm kind of going with that. My first love, but let's go back to Joshua and start in chapter 24. We're going to start reading in verse 14. This is where the Israelites now have crossed into the promised land. And basically Joshua is gathering them one last time before he sends them out abroad, in a sense, to their inheritance. So in verse 14 he says, "Now therefore revere the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your ancestors served beyond the river in Egypt and serve the Lord. Now, if you are unwilling to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you would serve, whether it's the gods of your ancestors served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." Then the people answered, "Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our ancestors up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight. He protected us along the way that we went and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore we also will serve the Lord, for he is our God." But Joshua said to the people, "You cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm. He will consume you after having done you good." And the people said to Joshua, "No, we will serve the Lord." Then Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourself that you have chosen the Lord to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses." And he said, "Then put away the foreign gods that are among you and incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel." And the people said to Joshua, "The Lord our God we will serve, and him we will obey." So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and made statutes and ordinances for them at Shechem. Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak in the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "See, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that spoke to us. Therefore it shall be a witness against you if you deal falsely with your God." And so Joshua sent the people away to their inheritance. Look at the opportunity that was just given to them. Joshua very clearly points out, here's the line in the sand. Who are you going to serve? And three times they said, "We will serve the Lord." I think God gives all of us this opportunity at some point in our lives where we must make a final decision on who or what we will worship. Some of us have already been there, made that decision, and some still have it still in front of them. This decision seems to come for many when they're experiencing one of the worst periods of their life, a period that brings them face to face with God, where they are asked, "Whom will you serve?" And prior to this decision, many wrestle with the thoughts of everything they will have to give up, They're afraid that God's going to require them to give up something they don't want to give up. We know that from the story of the rich young lad. He comes to Christ and he says, from my youth, from a young, very young lad, I did everything that I learned. And Christ acknowledged that. Yep, you have. And he asked Christ, he says, is there anything else I need to do? And Christ said, yeah, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And the rich young lad walked away sorrowfully. He was afraid God was going to take away something that he didn't want to give up. And I think some of us fear that prior to this decision, that God's going to ask us to give up something we're not willing to. I think some of us, after our decision, are afraid that God's going to come to us one day and say, will you give this up? And he puts something on the table that we weren't expecting, or we were hoping he wouldn't bring up onto the table. Turn over to Psalms 37. Because God wants to give us our heart's desires. Doesn't matter how old you are right now, what experiences you've been through in your life, you have desires deep within your heart. And there's two kinds. There's godly desires. You know they fall in love or fall in line with God's will. And then there's worldly desires. You know they fall in line with Satan's desire. Two types. God says he wants to give you the desires of your heart that he put there. Psalms 37, verse 1, from David, he says, do not fret because of the wicked. Do not be envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good, so you will live in the land and enjoy security. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. So right now, just think about what's one of your biggest desires. Whether you've realized it or not, what's a big desire that either was in your heart and it's been fulfilled, or is still there yet to be fulfilled? Is it of God? Meaning, is it in any way something that would go against his will? One of my desires when I was in my teens was that I would be able to be married and have a family. Is that of God's will? Do we see scripture where he actually commands us towards that? Not every single one of us, but he wants the earth to be multiplied and filled with his people, right? So that's not Satan speaking. Why wouldn't God give me that opportunity, that desire that he placed there? And right here in Psalms, it says he wants to do exactly that. He doesn't want to take something away from us. He wants to give us more. Sebastian, I'm hearing some ringing in my mic. Turn down like the mids or maybe even the highs. It's just, all right, well, yeah. I don't know why it's doing it this week, not other weeks. So today, because I can't talk very much about your first love or your desires, I'm going to talk about mine. I'm going to share my life's testimony, and I'm going to talk about, while I go through it, some of the desires that were there and what happened to those desires. Some of you have heard maybe the vast majority of this. Others maybe little bits and pieces, and for some of you, you haven't heard any of this at all. I enjoy sharing it, and I think it's very important that we share our testimonies on a regular basis. It does two things. Whoever we're sharing it with, hopefully we're sharing it in a way that they actually get to see what God did in our lives and that it leaves them with the potential that God might do the same thing in their life. The other thing is, it reminds me of what God's done in my life, and there's going to be so much that I don't get to today that either because of lack of memory or just lack of time. But here we go. I'm going to start back. This was probably about 12, 13 years ago. Lori and I, along with two other couples, so six of us, decided we wanted to go through a book together on marriage to enhance our marriage life, the six of us. So we met almost once a week for a couple of months, maybe 3 months at the most. And during that, towards the end, one of the ladies brought up the fact, and it tied in with one of the chapters of the book, that the following week we were going to do a histogram of our families. And we were to write down some things that we knew were brought forward from previous generations into our generations. And she, you know, and gave us little hints, things like addiction. That somebody that we know about in our family history have an addiction, and did that addiction get brought forward to the next generation? Things like anger. So we met the following week, and we're talking about some of the things that we recognized got brought forward, and were some of the things that were stopped. You know, some of us had evidence of a very serious problem within our clan, in a sense, and for whatever reason, it stopped in this generation over here, and it wasn't brought forward anymore, and what a blessing that was. But as we talked, as we got kind of getting done with the talk, it hit me all of a sudden, we haven't brought up anything about religion or spirituality. And why shouldn't that be part of our history? I know my history, but what about, and I know my mom's history, but what about my grandma's history? What about my great-grandma's history? My grandfather's, my great-grandfather's. Is there anything I can pinpoint there that should could show why I'm sitting here today? And so for the next few minutes, all of us kind of talked about that, and I related a couple of the stories that I could share from my family, and that goes back to my great-grandmother. Back in the, it probably would have been in the late 30s, early 40s, my mom was the oldest of eight, and in her household, her mom, my grandmother, was obese, and because of that, had quite a few health issues. My great-grandfather passed away, and so at that time, my great-grandmother moved into the home to help care for the eight kids. And during that time, not only was she caretaker, but she was their teacher as well, and their minister as well. My great-grandmother taught from the Bible the best she knew how. And it's obvious that she had a relationship with God rather than just simply a relationship with some church. From the standpoint, she taught my mom and her siblings the seventh-day Sabbath. This is a time where everybody in a community that wanted to go to church went to the church on the corner, and it was a Sunday-keeping church. My great-grandma's family, or my mom's family, didn't do that. They stayed at home, and they learned the Bible there through her. My great-grandma taught the Leviticus 23 holy days to her family. Who taught her? My great-grandma. I don't know that part of the story, but who taught her that? Where did that come from? Was she the first generation or the 40th generation? I don't know, but it perpetuated forward. My mom decided that my grandma was right and kept up with that way of thinking. In the early mid-50s, most of the kids were still in the household as farmers, in a sense. And somebody turned on the radio, and my mom tells this, or would tell this story. She said somebody turned on the radio one day, and they heard this preacher. That wasn't something new. There was a lot of preachers on the radio back in those days, and the radio was the only form of entertainment in the household other than what you made up yourself. And within a few minutes, they said, "Grandma," meaning my great-grandma, "listen to this guy. He's teaching the exact same things you teach us. He's teaching the seventh-day Sabbath and the holy days." It happened to be Herbert W. Armstrong. At that time, I think it was the Radio Church of God. Later became the Worldwide Church of God. And my mom and her family, her entire family, including my grandfather, her father, eventually started attending that church. They drove from Hart, Michigan, which is way up here, down to Grand Rapids. That was the first congregation in Michigan that was part of the what became Worldwide Church of God. They'd go down about once a month and keep the Sabbath with a group there. And over time, my mom was introduced to what became my dad, who was also attending that congregation. So look how it perpetuated forward. And years later, I had to ask God, what was this all about? How did I end up here, and how did they end up there, and why us? And I forgot to write it down, but a couple places in the Bible, I know Deuteronomy is one, why God says, those who love me and keep my commandments, I'm going to take care of them for how long? Anybody remember? 1,000 generations. Those who hate me and turn against me will feel it to the third and fourth generation. And how many families do we know that are dealing with addiction in the second, third, and fourth generation? Or you name the problem, and it just keeps carrying on. But he says, for those that love me and keep my commands for 1,000 generations, there's a problem here. I'm not a math whiz. There has not been 1,000 generations on this earth. That blows me away. But it also told me, when I got that answer directly from God, that he loves me so much that whatever I do today is not going to simply affect my sons, who are all here today, my granddaughter that is here today. It's going to affect my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter and grandson. And so I better realize the consequences of my actions. What do I want? What's my heart desire? And my heart desire is that my future generations are with God, period. I was born in 1966. My parents married the year before. I wasn't a honeymoon baby, but pretty close to it. My mom was 40 when she had me, so this was a little bit later in life. There was just two of us, my sister and I. My dad wanted to name me with great intention, Aaron, a priest of God. He told me the story when I was probably 7 or 8, why I was named that he wanted me to be a priest of God, period. That was his desire. Sadly, when my boys were born, my head was in a different place, and I didn't name them with quite the same intention. I kind of wish I had, but I still love my boys' names. When I hear a family who names their kids with intention, I think God pays close attention to that and makes a blessing on that. My early years, I already shared with you that I grew up in a church environment that kept the Sabbath, kept the holy days. My home environment, my parents were very diligent in trying to teach us what they could. At probably around age 6, I knew the Ten Commandments, not just the headline, literally word for word out of Exodus 20. Word for word, Mom taught us the Ten Commandments. She taught us the tribes, read to us over and over and over the Bible, different Bible stories. We had family Bible readings from time to time. I watched my dad every evening after supper sit down in his chair. He had a board that had arms on it. He got a board out that straddled those arms, got out his Bible, a notebook, and maybe a concordance. And he studied something, I didn't know what, studied something, and wrote down some notes. And he died in 2005, and him and my mom were living with us at the time. And about a year after his death, why my mom called me into her bedroom one night. She says, do you recognize these? And on her bed was three boxes. They're bigger than that, about like this, and they're just jam-packed with notebooks. And I opened one and kind of thumbed through it, and I says, that's Dad's study notes. So all those nights that I'd watched as a kid, my dad studying, and I didn't really know what. He usually sat there for about a half hour, maybe 40 minutes, and he took these notes. And she says, have you ever looked at those before? I said, no. She says, take a glance at them. Okay. So I glanced at a few. And after about the second or third different notebook I picked up, I realized what had happened. My dad wasn't writing down notes. He wrote out the Bible in its entirety, word for word, three to four times over. I was blown away. I had no clue that's what my dad was. I knew he had a love for God and his word, but I didn't know how intimate it had been. When I was probably pretty close to 10, there was an empty lot kitty corner across the street from us. And early one summer, a dad, his son, and a third gentleman had purchased that lot and started building a spec home. And I was always a curious sort, always looking for adventure. And so, you know, within a day or so of them showing up for the first time, I was over there. What are you doing? You know, why? And I went over there pretty much every day. And in short order, those men allowed me to help participate building this house. And I loved it. I thought it was fascinating. It's like, how do you put all this together? How do you know that's supposed to go together? You know, what's that tool do? And of course, later in life, I got a little bit more insight as to why I enjoyed that so much. But that was just something that I enjoyed, but I didn't realize at the time why I enjoyed it. In my teens was when I started realizing some of my heart desires. One of them was a desire to travel. Just kind of tuck that away. I still enjoy traveling greatly, but that was a very deep desire. I want to be able to travel, see new things. Didn't really have specific places I wanted to travel to. Still really don't have that many, you know, places that I'd like to go, or on a wish list in a sense, but I enjoy traveling. As I told you, I wanted a family. And inside of that desire, I wanted my family at somewhat of a younger age. I wanted to be married in my early 20s. And then on top of that, there was a combination with another desire, but along with my family, I wanted to be done having kids by the time I was 50. Which means by the time I'm 30, I want to be done having kids by the time I was 30 so that when I turned 50, they would be on their way out of the house or mostly out of the house. Not because I wanted to get rid of them, but which leads into my next desire. For some reason in my teens, I had this overwhelming desire to, and I would never phrase it this way, to retire at 50. That was not what was in my heart. What was in my heart was at age 50 to have my time be my time. That I get to write my calendar, my schedule, in a sense. Didn't really know what I meant by it, but I didn't want somebody else controlling my time by the time I was 50. We'll come back to that one. Over those teen years, I watched my dad pursue money in an unhealthy manner. We were not very well off by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, in the long run, my dad lost our house when I was in my mid-teens to foreclosure. That really took me off guard because, you know, of course, as a teen, I wasn't aware of what was really going on at the moment until it was being done. And so I formed a new desire in my heart to be financially better off than my parents had been. That may not necessarily be a bad desire, but how you go about it could absolutely be the wrong desire. In my 20s, I started that pursuit, basically following the same thing my dad did, the pursuit of money, because I wanted to be better off than they were. I wanted to be married, and so up until my mid-teens, there was not a Worldwide Church of God in the Lansing area, so we traveled to Flint every week to a congregation over there. And in that congregation was a family who had two boys that were straddled me, one a little bit older, one a little bit younger, and I knew them pretty well. They also had two daughters, one that was closer to my age, and then one that was quite a bit younger. I didn't pay any attention to the girls. The guys I hung out with a little bit, wasn't overly close with them. But then in my late teens, I think it was, right, 19, when we were at a function, by now we had a congregation in Lansing, so that now became like our sister church. And we did quite a bit from time to time, with as far as coordinating bigger activities and things. And we're at one of those larger activities over a weekend, and I was with a group of teens about my age. Again, we're around 18, 19, maybe 20, and we're sitting up in some bleachers, maybe a dozen of us talking, and all of a sudden, that girl just jumped out at me. And I'd known her since I was, since I was probably 6 or 7. But this time, it was like, hadn't been paying attention. Where did she come from? Got to get to know this one a little bit. So I did. On a fast track, I went to her, asked her for a date. She's, oh, no, you can't ask me. You got to go ask my dad. What? I knew her dad. He could be the intimidating type. He's very nice, but he knew how to be the intimidating type. So I walk up to him that weekend, and he knew who I was, and asked if I could take her out to a movie that evening. And he turned on the intimidation, pretty strongly. But I was persistent and probably tried to butter as much as I could or thought I should. And he said, okay, here's the rules. I abide by the rules, and we started dating, and that was what we dated for 3 years, 2-3 years at least. Then we were married when I was 23. And what a blessing that was, because I look back now, God was 100% putting wheels in motion there that I needed, but was not in deserving of. About the same time, as we were late in our dating years, I had stumbled through a lot of jobs looking for a career. Just hadn't come across a career yet that felt like it was going to be long term. And out of the blue, through a friend, I stumbled upon the jewelry career. And in very short order, got hired into it, and not just got my feet wet, but went through the school of hard knocks very quickly, and learned it, and then got to the point where I think it was about a year after we were married, I had been working for a store in Williamston that actually sold jewelry supplies and equipment to jewelers. But at the same time, they also did some jewelry work, so I was already doing some repair work there. But after about a year of being married, I felt confident to go into business for myself in one sense, but I had a friend who was doing the same thing, and what we were going to do is our two companies were going to pursue clients together in a sense, even though we had separate businesses. And we did that, and that was rolling along pretty smoothly. And then one day, one of my clients made a comment, "Hey, you should go talk to this store up in St. John's. I think they might be looking for a goldsmith." And I wasn't looking to be hired by anyone. I wanted to work for myself because, I didn't want to be controlled by somebody else's wish list. And but I thought, well, if I can pick him up as a client, I'll do that. So I got him on the phone, and he described to me, he says, "Well, I am looking for a goldsmith, but I want someone to work in my store." Right now, he was sending all of his jewelry work out to another goldsmith. He wanted to stop sending it, in a sense. And I said, "Well, I'd be willing to do your work in your store as long as I remained self-employed." He says, "Come on up, we'll talk." Well, I got the job. I worked for him for about 3 years, but within literally a matter of weeks, I realized this is a really good guy. This guy knows how to be the right kind of employer, actually wants to be a friend as well, and is looking out for his employees. And so at about the third year mark of working for him, I went to him and I said, "All right, I told you originally I didn't want to be hired. I'm ready to be hired." And he says, "I was afraid you're going to come to me like that sometime," because he was paying very good benefits, and up to that point, he didn't have to mess with my benefits. But he was being kind of joking. He was looking forward to us. I hired in as his actual employee, I believe, in September. When we had first met, I told him about the Sabbath and the holy days, and he says, "I don't like it, but I'll work around it." He says, "The fact that you go to church on a regular basis tells me that you have some morals and that you'll probably stick to them. So for that reason, I will work around. I'm not going to discourage you from going to church. I don't understand your Sabbath. I don't understand your holy days, but I'll work around them." September, I hired in as an employee, and at the end of the year, he calls me into his office. He says, "I know you don't do Christmas. This is not a Christmas bonus." He says, "But I want to give you something." He has an envelope, and it's thick. He says, at the time, Lori and I lived over in Perry. I'm working the stores up in St. John's. He says, "I'm going to give you this. You can spend it any way you want to." But he says, "I'd like to highly encourage you. I want you and Lori to move into this community." And he hands me the envelope. I didn't know what was in there, but he'd talked about us pursuing a house over there. We were renting at the time. I got home and I opened up that envelope, and there was enough for a down payment on a house. So we started looking for a house, and in short order, we found a wonderful house that we could afford, and we moved in. It was during that time that I realized that my pursuit of a career had kept falling short because I kept looking at white-collar careers instead of hands-on careers. When I was 10, I enjoyed working on a house, and I never put the fact together that I need to do something with my hands. And it was even later on that I realized that I have a creative side to my mind, and that I need to also, that needs to be incorporated with my career. I'm not going to be happy. And so for God to bless me with this career in jewelry, he satisfied my desires in ways that I couldn't even understand. And the same thing is true for you. He's going to satisfy your desires, and at first it's probably not going to look the way you think it should. And then as time goes by, you go, "Oh, wow, Father, you saved me from a lot of grief." Because I could have went to school to get a business degree, and I would have absolutely hated it. As much as I enjoy business aspects, I really do, I would have been miserable if you would have set me in a cubicle somewhere and expected me to sit there for 8 hours a day. Would not have went well. we bought this house, and I didn't know much about building, but we needed an addition. It was only a two-bedroom house when we bought it. It's the house that we're in now. And our kids were, we had two kids and knew we wanted more. Lori wanted a lot more. In my mind, I thought three, maybe four might be a good number. I grew up with two, you know, just the two of us. And but I was procrastinating with number three. But I knew we needed a little bit bigger house. And her dad had just finished building their house. Basically her dad and her oldest brother. And so I was talking with them, and I said, we need to build an addition. He basically says, I'll come help you, or I'll show you. And he did. He spent close to a year coming over very regularly and helping us build this addition and showing me things I'd never been exposed to in terms of building. And we ended up with a really nice addition out of it. But that also helped me develop more ways to pursue money. Again, in my 20s, I was in church and around church very regularly. I mean, every week. But God was not my first love. He was in the picture, but I had bigger things on my mind. In my 30s and 40s, I started utilizing credit. Started buying real estate. Big chunks of credit. Things were going pretty good. The banks loved me. At one point, me and a partner had almost $500,000 out in credit. And I was making about $40,000 a year. There's a problem, isn't there? If something goes bad, it's going to go bad hard. And then 2008 hit. God spared us. The summer of 2008, before the real estate collapse took place, I had a real estate company with a partner. And that's where we'd been buying real estate and doing those transactions. This summer, I decided I wanted Lori and I to reap the benefits 100%, not share it with another company, basically. So we found a HUD home, bought it, and was going to renovate it and flip it. Got it done, got it put on the market, and it sold within 2 weeks. The market crashed literally about 2 or 3 days later. If that would have happened, we would have lost truly our home and everything. But because all the business dealings were inside of a corporation, we were somewhat protected. And at the moment, things were still pretty good. I had renters. We had the corporate side of it had renters and everything. We had good money coming in. Then we lost our biggest renter. That was the one key. As long as we keep this one commercial renter, we're going to be fine. And one day he calls me up and says, Aaron, I'm leaving. I got a better deal. And because the market had crashed, there was no new renters out there to be heard. And we thought, well, we'll just keep trying. We'll find somebody. And after about 6 months, our reserves had dwindled down to nothing. And one day I realized I got to go to the bank and tell them what's going on. So I did. The banker was my friend. And I said, you know, he already knew we'd lost that renter. He just didn't know what the full picture looked like. I told him, he says, well, don't worry about the bonnet. He says, you're not the only one in this situation. He says, we can give you some leniency. I'll help you out. You know, just don't worry about it for a moment. Just keep looking for her. Okay. We're now into 2010, and by late summer, I can see the writing on the wall. This is going to get very ugly in just the next few weeks. Very, very ugly. I can't tell Lori. I don't even know how to tell Lori. The feast is coming up. And I had helped coordinate with several others feast sites for the last year, couple of years before that. And this year was was very similar, but when I say coordinate, I was the liaison for the feast site and the property. We were basically utilizing a resort over in Wisconsin. This year it was in Utica, Illinois. We were doing some catering, and I was in charge of all of that. I had to make sure that the property knew what we wanted to do, when we wanted to do it. I was in charge of getting prices around, keeping the prices down. I was also in charge of music that year. I was also in charge of the sound system that year. And we're looking at about 250 people going to be at that feast site. And leading up to the feast, I was putting all those things together, but I had this other thing on the back of my mind. I had met several years before Andy Laws from out west. He is in the church. We met him at the feast several years before this. Knew he was going to be coming to this feast site. And Andy owns a collections company. Not the typical collections company. Not small time. He actually, his clients are huge entities, huge corporations, where another corporation owes them millions and millions of dollars. To even, I know at one time he had the state of California was one of his clients. If you owed the state of California big money, Andy Laws was coming after you. And my thought was, I need to talk to Andy while I'm at the feast, because if anybody can help me figure my way out of this, Andy can. Or he'll have some insight. So my whole goal that year, really, going to the feast, was to sit down with Andy. We get to the feast that very first night, opening night, and I walk up to Andy. We give each other a hug, glad to see each other, and said, Andy, doesn't have to be right now, but sometime this feast, you and I have to sit down for a little while and talk about a situation I'm going through. He says, all right, we will, Aaron. He's real high energy. And over the next few days, I had issues with the sound system. I had major issues with music. And that was weighing on me. And now one of the other in leadership, I really wasn't in leadership. I was just a coordinator at the time. But the main leader of the feast light came down sick, bedridden, for the next 3 or 4 days. And because I was known as a coordinator in a sense, any problems that were showing up then over those next 3 or 4 days at the feast site, people were coming to me. Problems that they would normally take to a minister, they were coming to me. I'm not prepared for this in any way, shape, or form. And I'm having a mental breakdown. I don't realize it. But I've got so much on my plate, and none of it's going right in a sense. And I haven't talked to Andy yet, so I don't have any clue what's going to happen there. And now all these additional problems, and I'm trying to keep track of them, but I didn't realize it, but I was entering into absolute mental exhaustion. And the end of the feast comes, the last great day comes, the last great day service comes and goes, and I come off the stage from doing music, and Andy comes up to me and says, Aaron, we never sat down and talked. And this huge wave of emotion come over me, and I said, Andy, I cannot leave until you and I sit down and talk. All right, we're going to do it right now. Come on, let's go. And we ducked down the hallway, found a hidden corner where nobody could find us, because if somebody knew where I was at, I'd be barraged with the next set of challenges. And we sat there for about 3 hours. For the first 20 minutes, I opened up everything that I knew about my financial situation to Andy. I told him, I didn't hold anything back because I knew he had to know the entire story. And I get done and Andy says, wow. Do you understand there's nothing I can do for you? And I said, yeah, I think I knew that. He says, do you understand that there's nothing anybody out there can do to help you out of this situation? I said, yeah, I think I knew that too. He says, do you understand that there's one entity that could help you out of this situation? And I said, yeah, you're talking about God. He says, all right. Now, at the time, Andy was talking to me. After the fact, I realize I'm on a one-on-one, face-to-face meeting with God. He's using Andy's body and Andy's voice, but I am one-on-one sitting down with God. Andy says, I got three questions for you. I said, okay. He says, do you pray to God? And I said, from time to time, I might think about something and I might pray to him, ask him to take care of that situation. He says, okay. He says, do you read his word? And I already realized I need to be truthful. Whatever's coming out of this conversation, I need to be 100% truthful. I said, I take my Bible to church with me every week. He says, okay. And then he asked a question that I've never heard this wording before this. He said, Aaron, do you give back to God all that he requires? Now, the church I grew up in taught tithing. So that was where my mind went first. He's always asking me about tithing. But I realized he just worded it very strange. He didn't say tithing. He just says, do I give back to what God requires of me? And my only response was, every now and then I feel like I have a little bit extra, and so I'll put it towards the church. He says, okay. He says, Aaron, you're going through the worst thing you've ever experienced in your life, aren't you? I said, yeah. He says, you just told me that you realize there's nobody that can help you out of this except for God. I said, yeah, I did. He says, Aaron, you just told me that you're not giving God a single reason to help you out of this. It wasn't my 2x4 head to the, you know, to the back of the head moment. It sounds like it, but that's the most loving, gentle touch I've ever received from God. Because what I deserved in the moment was a 2x4 to the back of the head. And all he did was put his arm around me and said, Aaron, I'm just waiting for you. I looked at Andy and I said, I'm all in. I'm 100% in. I think that caught Andy off guard because he says, well, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to start reading. I'm going to start praying. I'm going to give back what he requires. I said, Andy, I think I'm going to need an accountability partner. I said, will you be my accountability partner? He says, yes, I will, on one condition. I said, okay, what's that? He says, I'm not going to hold you accountable to what you say you're going to do. Or excuse me, he says, I'm going to hold you accountable to what you say you're going to do. I said, okay. And I really didn't know what he meant. He says, okay, so you just told me you're going to start praying. How are you going to start praying? I'm not much of a morning guy. In the evening before I go to bed, I will set aside time. I will pray every night before I go to bed. And Andy said, I think you need him earlier in the day than that. And I said, well, but I'm not a morning person. He says, I get it. But he says, the moment you open your eyes, you need to start talking with God. I said, okay. I'm not much of a morning person. This is going to be hard, but I'll do that. I'll wake up and I'll literally start praying to God. And he said, how are you going to start reading his word? And, well, I'm not much of a morning guy, so in the evening before I go to bed, I'll set some time aside and I'll read his word every night. And he says, if you're going to start praying to him in the morning, you probably start need to hear his answers to you earlier in the day rather than later. And do you know that he answers a lot of your prayers through reading his word? And I hadn't heard it quite phrased that way before. And I go, oh. My mornings are going to get changed drastically, and I don't know how this is going to go. I said, okay, I'll get up in the morning, I'll pray, and then I'll read his word. And Andy said, okay, now, how are you going to give back what he requires of you? And I said, well, I know what I know about tithing. I don't think it's unbiblical, what I know, but I'm not certain it's 100% biblical. So I think for the moment, I will start being diligent in tithing the way I was taught, but I'm going to start studying immediately on that topic, and as God opens my eyes to what he requires, I will make those changes. And he says, okay, I will hold you accountable to those things. This is a meeting that took about 3 hours. I left there feeling much better. I mean, the weight that was off my shoulder that evening was huge. But there were some new weights. She has no clue about the financial situation. And she absolutely has zero clue about this meeting that just took place with God and I and what I just agreed to do. How in the world do I talk to her about this? So the next morning, we're still at the feast site. I wake up and immediately I get on my knees. And that's one of the first things I tell God. I said, I got a lot of things ahead of me, but I have no clue how my family is going to react to this. I need your help. And that's about all I could say. And I was done praying. Went over, picked up my Bible, and I read a few chapters. And then I went about my day. The next morning, we're back at home. I wake up, and it's hard because I'm not a morning person. It's very hard. I crawl onto the floor, get my knees on the floor, and I'm kneeled at the bedside, and I start praying. And within a matter of seconds, I bet, I'm starting to fall asleep. And it's like, Father, I'm sorry, but I need to wake up. I'm going to go run, take a quick shower. That will get me wake up, and it'll get me warm. It's cold. I was cold. So I went in the shower. I'm about to turn it off. It dawns on me, I'm awake. I'm warm and very comfortable. Why can't I pray right here with a shower on? So I did. And I did that for the next big handful of months. That was my prayer time, was in the shower. And my prayers kept getting longer and longer. And I'd get out of the shower and I'd go read his word. And I don't remember how I brought up to Lori what was going on about the financial stuff. We ended up having to have a conversation. And the reality is, in the long run, we went through a bankruptcy. We didn't have to lose our house, and we didn't have to lose my retirement. God had blessed me with an employer that when I hired in, he matched my gross by 25% and put it into a retirement account for me. There's no other employer I've ever heard that does something like 25% of my gross was matched. Every dollar I made, my boss took another 25 cents and put it into a retirement account for me. And when we went to the court, that's one thing they didn't take. They didn't take your house, and they did not take your retirement. I have a very nice retirement. I have no clue why that money's sitting there. I don't know what God has in store for us with that, how it's supposed to be used. I don't care. I know he blessed it in a way, but however it turns out, that's fine. But I know I brought Lori in on what was going on financially, but within a couple of weeks of coming back from the feast and me being diligent about being on my knees, and she saw what was going on, but I still didn't know how to tell her about this conversation. And I'm worried that my wife's not going to be on the same page with me. I didn't feel like she disliked God. I just was concerned she was going to want to stay in the exact same place I was at prior to this. I walk out of the bathroom one morning, and this was literally just weeks after the feast, and there's my wife kneeling at her bedside. I didn't have to say anything. God went to her and said, "Would you do this?" And she said, "Yes," also. From there, one of my huge revelations was, I have wasted so much time with my boys. They're now in their teens, or at least Sebastian and Clay were in their teens, and I only have a couple of years left, potentially. I can't recoup the lost time, so how do I make the most out of this time going forward? And he started answering that in ways I could never imagine. My sister has been in homeschooling for a large number of years, and somewhere in there she had asked us for several years in a row if we wanted to go to the homeschoolers convention, which is usually in, what, March? May? Okay, in Lansing. And I turned her down, but this year for some reason we decided to go, and it's over a Sabbath for the most part, but on Saturday the homeschoolers convention sets up a big handful of lectures, seminars, whatever you want to call them, and you pick and choose the topic or the speaker that you kind of like, and you just go to that one for the moment. And I went to one, and I don't remember if Lori, I think, were you with me for Mike Winters? So the head coordinator, Mike Winters, was given a presentation on, I don't remember what his title was, but it was basically how not to date or something like that. Yeah, it was on courtship, but he intrigued me because I knew my boys are heading that direction, and I just needed to know more that I could share with him. And this Mike Winters gave an awesome presentation about his son who was about to be married and what he went through and how he did it. And then I decided to share that with my boys. And that was just one of the ways that God answered my prayer on how do I teach my boys this. That kind of brings us up to now. For me to be sitting here, this was not ever part of my picture. I wouldn't say it was one of my desires. However, I think it was one of my father's desires. It might have been my great-grandmother's desire. I feel very blessed. I mean, Lori and I can't remember all the ways God has blessed us since 2010. In ways that we needed and ways that we didn't expect. I told you I love traveling. In 2014, Lori and I are traveling. Sebastian had, I don't remember if he'd moved. 2014, I think. Well, anyhow, we were going out to ultimately visit Sebastian and maybe meet Caitlin and her family for the first time. I don't remember what the reasoning was, but we were going out to West Virginia, and we left on Friday, and then, and so we're traveling late. We left after I got out of work on Friday. It's close to midnight, and we're almost to, we're going to stay at Johnny Yvonne Benzinger's house. Some of you might know him, but they live about an hour plus north of Sebastian, or where his family lives now. And we're going to spend the night with them. And I'm driving, and Forrest is with us. He's sleeping in back, and Lori is sleeping beside me. And I'd been listening to an audio Bible, and I'd listened to it for probably over an hour, and I decided just to turn it off and just let silence, you know, be there. Didn't have any real specific thoughts running through my head, and all of a sudden, it was like somebody turned a billboard on inside my head. I don't know if you call this a vision or a daydream or what, but it was like this big billboard inside of my head lit up, and it had two words on it, and it said, Feast Kenya. And right away, I knew God's talking to me. And I said, Father, I don't know what you're telling me. I see the words, but I don't know what it means. And I knew this was big. I knew God's talking to me. So I reached over and I grabbed Lori's leg. And of course, she kind of jolts. What's going on? I said, nothing, but I think God just told me something. What are you talking about? I said, God just said, Feast Kenya. We're going to the feast in Kenya. I said, I didn't say that. And I don't think he said that. I don't know. But her mind, we're going to the feast, or she heard we might be going to the feast in Kenya. It's the farthest thing out of my thought process. We can't afford it. It's not a place I'd ever thought about going. It's not that I wouldn't want to go. It's just it never was on a wish list or anything like that. We get to the Benziger's house, basically say goodnight to them, get settled into our room. Lori's on her lap or on her iPad. She's looking up flights to Kenya. She says, we can't do this. I said, what are you talking about? She says, the flights are like $1,800. And I said, I know. But if God wants us to go to the feast in Kenya, he's going to provide a way. Over the next few months, she looked on a really regular basis, and the prices kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And at one point, she says, Aaron, they're $900 round trip. And I said, at that point, we could maybe pull it off, but would take everything we have. But God will, if God wants us to go, he'll take care of this. And over the next week or two, they kept dropping. And at one point, she called me up at work. She says, Aaron, they're below $700. I said, I think God wants us to go to the feast in Kenya. He made the way. So that night I come home, and I booked the flights. At that point, they'd went from like 680, and I booked them for 725. And we went to the feast in Kenya. My desires, there's not a single one that he hasn't met and blessed way beyond imagination, way beyond imagination. He doesn't want to hold back in any way. He wants us to realize that he has placed desires in your hearts for a reason. He's not going to forsake them, but will you? Will you give up that desire so that you can have something material? Let's turn to Revelation 2. You know, once we've made our commitment to God, there is going to be times when we feel where we go through some low spots and then some high spots and then some low spots again, where we want to slack off, not be quite as diligent as we once were. We'll allow some distractions to creep in, or to even deception. And we'll start putting some of our focus towards those things or other things other than God. Just as the Israelites did shortly after they entered that land, they allowed the distractions and the deceptions in. Right now, we're in a time of drastic distraction and deception. Where are we at spiritually? Revelation 2 and verse 1, he says, To the angel of the church of Ephesus write, These are the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance. I know that you cannot tolerate evildoers. You've tested those who claim to be apostles but who are not, and have found them to be false. I also know that you are enduring patiently and bearing up for the sake of my name, and that you have not grown weary. But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember then from what you have fallen. Repent. Do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent. Do the works you did at first. It takes effort and it takes diligence. It's going to take a lot of strength. So we need to be praying for each other. Richard's having a tough week. Pray for him. I bet he has other coworkers that are having a tough week. Pray for them. When we sit down to eat here in just a couple of minutes, find out what others are going through. Hear their praise report or hear their need. But do something about it. I'm asking you for your prayers. I'm enjoying this position, but right now I've got too much on my plate mentally, and I can't give you a lot of details, but it has to do with work and the Haar family. At some point I will give you the details. It's not affecting me in a bad way, other than it's just huge, and it's hard to comprehend, and I just need some extra strength through it. So I'm asking you to pray for me. But each one of you have things going on. In verse 6, he says, "Yet this is to your credit. You hate the works of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. Let anyone who has an ear listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches. To everyone who conquers, I will give permission to eat from the tree of life that is in the paradise of God." He just wants to give us more than we ever imagined. And we can't imagine how awesome the future is. What's your testimony? Share it. Write it out. Think about it. See how God is truly taking care of you, even in times when I didn't deserve it, you don't deserve it. Even when you turned away from him. Matthew 6:33 says, "But strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." We'll give you a little bit of homework. Read that whole chapter, Matthew 6. It helps you through a whole lot of things. God doesn't want to take away from us the things that he placed in our heart. He wants to bless us with those plus so, so much more. Any thoughts, comments, questions? I know it's been a little bit longer than normal, but if not, let's end up with a song.